This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, I'm Hanif Baharuddin, and you're tuned in to the show that brings you closer to the people and places of our capital city. Joining me in the studio today are the people behind Somewhere in the Kuala, a children's book that was released a few months ago by Suburbia Projects. They are Lisa Goh and William Chew. I said that it's a children's book, but it's actually a bit more than that, at least for me as an adult who can't help but feel the sense of joy, wonderment and adventure as I went through the book. Somewhere in the Kuala somehow manages to combine quirky, cute illustrations with surprisingly accurate depictions of the city's many hotspots as it brings us along with Han and Mina as they literally get lost in the city. Here's Lisa and William to tell us more about Somewhere in the Kuala.
Hi, I'm Lisa. I'm a full-time illustrator based in KL. I love drawing people, plants and environments, and I've been doing this for the past 2 years. So yeah.
For the past 2 years. And I understand that you have your own thing as well, right? Yeah. Mind sharing a bit about that?
I guess you can rewind back a little. I actually did architecture and completed my studies, but decided to go into illustration full-time. I started this since 2022 and have been hopping around different places to exhibit and sell my work. And then from there, I decided to collaborate with William to do this book together about KL.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Hi, I'm William. I teach in MIA, that's Malaysian Institute of Art, under the Interior Design Department. And I also do some freelance kind of design work or help out with Lisa with illustrations. I like walking around cities. I like looking at quirky things that happens in our built environment and photographing them. And yeah, that's kind of what I do.
Awesome. All right. So how did the two of you meet and how did that lead to Somewhere in the Kuala?
We met
since high school.
Ah,
a long time.
Okay. Yeah, I see.
We go way back.
We
start about the book first.
Yes.
Because that's easier to handle. How the book came about, we've talked about wanting to do something together and wanting to do a children's book from an architectural kind of angle before, like on our own. But it's just a dream. It wasn't anything concrete.
It was just like a conversation in the car that we have 2 weeks before we meet Suburbia Projects. So we actually went to their office to have a look at their books.
I wanted to buy a book from them. And then I forgot, was it Ashran or Nadia? They just said, well, we want to speak to you.
Yeah.
And then they came up with this proposal and there we go.
Yeah, in the meantime, they were actually searching for an illustrator and a writer to make a children's book. And then it was like, wait a second, 2 weeks ago, William and I was just talking about it. And then, it's like a puzzle that we've ngam-ngam fit in the spot. And then Asha and Nadia were very happy to invite us in this collaboration. You want to talk a little bit about the grant that they are doing at that time?
Oh, yeah. So they were going to apply for the Think City grant for like any projects within the sort of creative district that they've outlined. Then, yeah, we kind of just thought that was just great to have a grant to help facilitate the printing process and this whole thing. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to do it anyways because it's just a lot of cost on our side. Yeah.
Sounds like everything seems to at that time fall in place with regard to you guys wanting to create a children's book on architecture and them, I guess, looking for collaborators, right, I suppose. But what made you actually want to specifically write a book for children specifically on architecture? Yeah, because I mean, you can always approach it from multiple different angles, right? I mean, obviously, you can also write written books, I suppose. But what made you want to, like, is it because of your strength in illustration or like, did you guys actually have always had this idea of wanting to, I guess, get kids to be a bit more exposed to architecture, I suppose?
Well, both of us coming from architecture background, definitely, like, that's the boring answer, lah. It's like straightforward. But then I guess, yeah, Lisa's style, like illustration style, kind of lends itself very well for kids to be exposed to shapes, to forms, to colors, to spaces. But also there's a playfulness in it that is more liberating and, you know, compared to, I mean, I enjoy words, like I enjoy Nazmi Anwar's book as well. But it's just a different medium of appreciating spaces.
I think from our observation in the bookshops that we go to, we seldom see a lot of architecture books for kids. The one book that I saw is How to Be an Architect. It was like a very 101 dummy book, How to Be an Architect, but for kids. It's fine. I think we wanted more subjective way of looking at the city. So we felt like we wanted to bring in what we learn and what we have been observing about the city to the kids.
And then there was one book that Asha and Nadia kind of showed us during one of the meetings, and that was Patimah Kampung. That was a really, really good book. It was a supposedly an illustrated children's book, but it was very deep and very serious. And we really liked it, but we also know that that's not the kind of content that we want to be putting out, because I mean, yeah, it was deep and
it's quite heavy.
Yeah, it's quite heavy for kids.
Yeah.
I find that quite interesting, because I think to a certain extent, Somewhere in the Koala is, to me, kind of deep and a bit heavy. I mean, it's not too heavy, but it's a bit heavy as well. You know, to a certain extent, if you read between the lines, I suppose. So I find it quite interesting that you guys are trying to shy away from that. Which is why, I mean, because on the surface, if you look at it, Somewhere in the Koala looks very colorful and attractive. But upon reading it, yeah, I feel like it's a bit more than that. Yeah, so obviously, KL is the, I guess, the primary setting of the book as well. Is that also something that you guys deliberately do because you want the city to be part of the central narrative to the story? Or is it because of the grant, perhaps?
I think it's a mix, because we both appreciate cities very much, especially like in our what we were studying in school. And our projects was very city-centric and urban and about how to make cities like a better place. So inherently we have that, and then the grant is just kind of another thing that we have to fulfill, which is okay. I mean, you know, we're happy with that as well.
Yeah, I think from my point of view, making this book allows me to understand KL better. I think I grew up not being in KL quite a lot. I understand about urbanism and city and architecture when I started studying architecture in the UK. I think my experience walking in London quite a lot, I mean, obviously the city itself is quite accessible by foot. I learned to enjoy walking in the city and really absorbing the different environments and different kinds of people. So I understand London way more than KL. And then that time I decided to come back to KL with William, and I was wondering, why did I not do this walking in KL a lot? And then that's when I started to go to KL more. And then at the same time, I joined a lot of art events that is scattered around KL, especially in Zhongshan or Rex KL or Go Down. I mean, the list goes on. It's getting more and more happening on that side. That's when I realized I'm starting to piece by piece connect all the dots and have a better mental image of what there is in KL, what there is more to offer. And while making the book, I'm starting to like understand more about the city. It's kind of a project for me to like my city again as well. I like KL already. It's just that I'm not familiar of it. And then this pushed me further to get to know more of where I came from. And then I think because of that, we wanted to kind of continue this method of observing the city to the next generation, to kids, to kind of let them be exposed of this method of seeing the city, which is just being carefree and walking around and just observing things more.
I think that's the reason why perhaps the story was designed to be as such, right? Essentially a mini adventure. For Han and Mina across KL, right?
Yes.
Yeah. But how did you come up with the story itself? Was it inspired by like, the real life event or situation? Because if you think about it, I mean, spoiler alert, because I don't want to tell, I mean, I don't spoil the experience to the audience, to the listeners. But if you think about it, I mean, the story is something that's might have happened to, you know, all of us when we were growing up, I suppose, one way or another. But at the same time, the first time I was reading it, I kind of liked the story and how it was told. And for me, that's pretty interesting, yeah. But I mean, just curious to see whether it was like perhaps inspired by like a real life event or personal situation, I suppose.
I don't think it was a personal event. I mean, I was lost for a bit when I was a kid, and I'm sure you have been lost at some point, but not to the extent of, you know, that kind of exaggeration. But it is a story, and exaggerations are allowed in some ways, right, for fantasies and for adventures. I think there's a little bit of it where it's kind of us exploring a city and kind of wanting to bring that feeling into the book. And then when readers read through it, there is that feeling as well that like, oh, we're going from one space to another space to another space to another space. And then we're being led, you know, through all these spaces. And I think one thing that we were quite inspired by was the kind of conviviality and liveliness of a city. And it doesn't have to be KL. It can be, you know, London. It can be anywhere, right? Where if you are someone who works in the city or lives in the city, there are these characters that you come across repeatedly, and over time you kind of get to know them. And sometimes you don't plan to meet them. You're just out about on your own day, and suddenly you meet one person, and then you chat with them, and then you just move on, and then you meet another person that you know, but you didn't plan to meet them. So that kind of chance encounters of going from spaces to spaces is something that we wanted to put into the book as well.
Yeah, I think coming from a job that always stays at home to draw, a very solo kind of lifestyle, when I'm doing pop-ups, I meet different kinds of people. And that's where it's good to have an open mind to kind of connect with strangers. There are other readers who read our book kind of like discourage the kid to kind of...
Oh, they have to remind the kids, do not follow strangers.
Which,
understandably so. Yes. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I was just about to get to that. Because you know, on one hand, you could... I mean, I enjoy adventures of this nature, and I think to a certain extent, I can appreciate the tone that your guys are trying to incorporate with the story. But at the same time, a part of me also was wondering whether, you know, the story was it meant as a, for example, as a precautionary tale, you know, for kids, right? To be careful and to also make sure that you don't, I guess, stray away from your parents, you know, whenever you're out and about, right? Or yeah, or was it meant to perhaps encourage kids to explore and go on a mini adventure in the city, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I think we see it a bit like teaching kids about, let's say you teach a kid to cook, you have to teach them how to use fire, you have to teach them how to use knife. These things are very helpful in daily life, almost like a necessity, but it's also potentially dangerous, right? So rather than shying away from the city altogether and to say like, oh, don't speak to strangers completely and, you know, completely shying away from those stuff, learn to spot danger and learn to deal with them. And in that way, you kind of also get to appreciate the beauty of a city, the beauty of spontaneity and of connectivity and all that. Because at the moment, I feel that everyone is very isolated and all our social activities are super planned, like very, very planned out. And I find that a bit, you know, we need some space for spontaneous connections.
Yeah, I think people are starting to find more spontaneous things within the phone instead of real life. Like the algorithms are just popping out random things, and I think that's what we're seeking as well, the novelty in things, but you can also do it in real life. But we're too scared to kind of like go out to meet different kinds of people, so
it is problematic. We understand the problems behind it, and maybe we could have handled it better, but I think it strikes a conversation, which I think is much more interesting than to give a solution. I don't think we're here to give kind of solutions. We're kind of provocating.
Yeah. One example that I can bring in is we also have a reader who bought this book. He grew up in KL as well. He's much older, not a kid anymore. And when he read the book, it reminded him when he was younger. He actually traveled and walked around KL with his siblings because he grew up there. And there are people who are just more adventurous enough to go out and see what's around. It really depends on the individual and how their upbringing is.
Yeah.
So, I understand the cautiousness of things, but sometimes you gotta let go a bit.
Yeah. Also, like, you know, how our parents always talk about those adventures of like, oh yeah, when I was a kid, I used to do this, I used to do that, we just go out and play and stuff like that. And then when we were kids, we were just told to stay at home and go tuition, you know. It's like, what happened to all that?
Yeah, you know? I don't blame my parents, they're just protecting me.
Yeah.
But because of that, I don't know KL enough. It's only after like 25 years later, only I come back to KL to see what's up. Then I realize I missed out a lot of things. So I think it's important to go out a little at least, not to stop there immediately. Yeah.
That was Lisa Goh, and she's joined by William Chiu, and they're both the authors of Somewhere in the Kuala, a new children's book about the city published by Suburbia Projects. We'll have more after the short break. Stay tuned. I'm Hanif Baharudin, and you're listening to I Love KL on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to I Love KL, bringing you closer to the people and places of our capital city. I'm Hanif Baharudin. Lisa Goh and William Chiu, the dynamic duo behind Somewhere in the Kuala, a children's book published by Suburbia Projects, are with me in the studio, and we've been discussing the book's fascinating story and premises that showcases the city in a very unique way. We're going to continue the conversation by hearing the way they plot and map the book out and weave the story together with KL's many interesting locations.
Okay, so I guess we start with the logical limit that we wanted the kids to explore the city on their own. So they kind of got lost, right? But they had to go home. We don't want homeless kids in the city. We don't want to be, you know, showing that in the book. So that means that they have to go back home at some point through the LRT. So that's like the end point. So we have a starting point of them coming out from the LRT, and then the end point of them going back home using the same method. Then it's about planning the loop, how they go around the city. And that's the more difficult part, which is we wanted to show the kind of canonical parts of KL, the parts that if you search KL on Google Images, that's the kind of things that you see, the places that are of national importance, of historic significance, those things. That's one part. But then we also wanted to show the other parts that are much more ordinary, very day-to-day. And that becomes a bit more subjective. But that's okay, because everyone has their own idea of what KL is. Everyone has their own favorite spots to have lunch. And so we kind of included the parts of KL that would make sense for the kids to run around within their physical limits of walking, but also parts that we have a kind of affinity towards. Like, for example,
Center
Chapati is a restaurant that I go there for lunch because I work somewhere near-ish that area. And so that kind of having, being there in person and seeing the space and feeling the heat and the humidity and the smell and everything like that, that's quite important for us to capture as well.
Did you guys go on an actual tour of these places to make sure the flow of the story makes sense and is realistic enough? Should readers want to follow Han and Mina's paths, I suppose?
Yeah, some parts are quite difficult to walk around in. We actually had to go and walk around in all those areas. So there's a part of the story that's about cycling, and we were trying to document some parts along the street where they were cycling. And there were parts of the road where you just have to cross when there's no proper kind of crossing, and the cars are like zooming by really quickly, like 60, 70 km per hour. So yeah, bit dangerous. Don't do all the places. But yeah.
It's not only like going on site. We actually use the internet as well, Google Maps, to kind of navigate through. There are times where we even look at YouTubes, because some people actually record their journey walking around KL. So I quite like it, the research process. It's not only your experience, but you look at other people's way of routing around the city. It's also valid, even though the book is primarily from our experience, because you can really draw KL in any way, because everyone's KL is different. So, but yeah, we use kind of like different sources to get our in forthright.
And considering your background in architecture, how important is accuracy in this? Because I have to say that I think for me, I actually went in blind reading the book, and part of the, I guess, appeal of going through it, which is why I'm quite reluctant to actually spoil it to our listeners, is actually identifying these places. Yeah, and I think I'm quite proud to say that there are only two places that I was a bit confused, and one of them only because I've never actually been to that place, but I'm quite surprised that I managed to actually, you know, recognize all these places just by looking at them. And like, oh, okay, this is, I know where this is. So how important is accuracy, especially when it comes to an illustration of this nature, right, where you can actually take a lot of creative liberties, I suppose? Yeah.
I think accuracy for ornaments and like spacing of windows and everything should be there. I think primarily I work with how is it feel when you're there. So it's really a lot about the colours and the textures in the scene. Is it gritty? Is it like an open space? Or is it green and lush? So whenever I'm actually doing these images beforehand, I'll really go to the site to kind of look at these spaces. What should I capture in it? At the same time, go back to the internet to get better photos or my own site photos to get the buildings right or the roads correct. So it's a little bit of both. I think I cannot make it too abstract that it's like, cannot identify it. So I'm always in between things to make sure it's readable and also fun at the same time. Yeah.
Mm. There were also spots that we were a bit confused because I don't think, only because I have spoke to a bunch of my friends as well. We were reading it together and we're like, oh, okay, I didn't know that this place has this thing kind of thing. And especially considering how rapid KL's development is, especially now, were there any worries that, you know, perhaps what you depicted in this book might no longer be there or might look different now, especially considering how rapid the development is happening in KL right at this moment?
Yeah, I think that time span between when we begin doing the research and drawing and until we release the book, right, so that whole period is like 10 months. We started, was it in February of 2023, and we released it in December.
December, yeah.
In that time frame, I think there were already like one or two scenes that changed. The one that I know for sure is Pasasania. Yeah, if you go there now and you try to find the same location, you can see that there's a new thing there now. It looks quite different from what we have.
Mm.
Yeah, and what is
Merampasa.
Yeah, Merampasa, yeah.
Now
yeah.
Has some new lush thing growing
but to be
beside
fair,
the
like,
clock tower.
Yeah, to be fair, yeah. Merampasa, when we were drawing it, when we started out drawing it, it was already hoarded up. So it was like they've removed all the pavement and everything like that. But we're not going to draw that and out. So that one was based on our memory, or like in my memory, what Merampasa was when I was a kid running around those areas.
Yeah, and I don't know this, but I'm sure that they're going to still retain the clock tower, right?
Yes, yeah.
The clock tower is still there. It's just that the landscaping is very different. Mm, yeah.
Yeah. One thing that actually confused me for a bit was actually Bukit Bintang and how you guys depicted outside Bukit Bintang having all these pop-up markets and stuff. And okay, I have to admit that I don't really go to Bukit Bintang that often, but I didn't know that there's a pop-up market thingy out there, yeah, which was why I was a bit like confused.
Yes, there is quite a few, like, because pop-up is more popular right now. I think the real thing that really happened is actually outside of Star Hill.
Not in front of Pavilion,
no,
right?
No, not in front of Pavilion. Yeah. But to us, it didn't really matter because it's an open space where anything could happen. I think maybe because we wanted to capture the view from Pavilion to see the road that stretches from two ends and the commercial buildings at the end, which includes Star Hill and Fahrenheit.
Yeah,
so we liked that view quite a lot. And we didn't want to put the pop-up where it was, which is at Star Hill. So we kind of brought it forward. And there's some parts that are like not based on real life, but it could happen if you plan it out. Yes.
If someone made a proposal and pitched it to Pavilion and I don't know, maybe they take it and then you have a pop-up and then it's real.
Yeah.
You mentioned that, I mean, there is a need to perhaps, I guess, highlight the more well-known places, I suppose. But you guys also make the point to make sure that you guys include your own personal favourites as well, right? Yeah, but what I find quite interesting is that there are also places that, you know, if you were to ask me, like maybe 5 years ago, I would consider these places as still a bit more, I guess, a bit of a hidden gem, you know. But the fact that you guys included places like Cheongsan and Rex KL, I find that quite interesting, because part of me was, you know, still looking at these places and thinking that, oh, okay, these places are still, I mean, it's the hip places, to be fair, but I wasn't sure whether they're, you know, they will reach the point where it will be included in a book of this nature, where, you know, where it will sit alongside your traditional popular places, I suppose. So was that a natural decision, I suppose, to perhaps include it, to make it a bit more current and contemporary, especially for readers in this day and age, right, I suppose?
Well, for those spaces, I find them important to the creatives who operate in and around KL, because they are hubs where people can gather and do projects together and make things happen, and that's where all your exchanges happen. So I do value them for what they do in that sense. But also, it's having a series of different, let's say, categories of places. Some that are completely everyday. For example, the restaurant that I was referring to, it could have been a kopitiam, it could have been a mama, it could be anything, right? But that's just the one that I chose. But then there are some where there's a bit more objectivity to it, which, for example, like Cheongsan or Rex, I would say that there is a group of creatives that all would collectively agree that it's a place that they value for their contribution. And of course, there are plenty more that we couldn't add in because the book would have been super thick. And
yeah, like, volume 2 or 3.
We would have loved to include all of them, but we have to make certain selections.
Yeah. What are some of these places, if you don't mind sharing a bit? Unless you guys are planning to actually do a sequel for this book, which is something I'm planning to ask you guys later, actually. But
I don't think we're going to do a sequel.
Not
yet.
Moment,
not yet. Not. Yeah.
Yeah,
not in the plans at the moment.
Yeah.
What are they? Go Down?
Xinzi Xia Temple.
The temple, yeah. The Chinese temple. We wanted, that was actually in the sketches, but we had to cut that out because, again, the page restrictions and everything like that. We wanted to do more interiors, like inside of Masjid Jamek or, you know, those kind of places. But yeah, again, it's hard. Yeah, we could have planned it out a bit better maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, even Bukit Nanas. Inside
of Bukit Nanas, yeah.
What is it called, that park?
Yeah, it's Bukit Nanas. Well, it's now called KL Eco City.
Yes, we wanted to also have a short trip inside there as well, but like decided to just walk past it instead for that scene. So there are bits that we took it out and couldn't put it in.
Yeah, otherwise it would be a dictionary.
Yeah, it's going to be too thick. Yes. So yeah.
William, earlier you said that you didn't want to, I guess, truly depict the grittiness of KL, I suppose, one way or another, by, I guess, showcasing it, or rather you don't want to show, like, you know, kids being homeless and whatnot. But at the same time, I think I find it quite interesting that there's this one scene in the book that showcases what I would consider a more quote-unquote real estate aspect of the city, right? That I think, if you think about it, others sometimes might sway from. And again, I'm very reluctant to spoil it for our listeners, but I think you guys can kind of know which scene I'm referring to. I mean, certain mosques here and there.
So
was that decision actually a deliberate one on your end, especially when it comes to, I guess, portraying the realities of the city, I suppose?
Yeah, it's deliberate.
I think a part of it was to critique the urban planning of it, because it's really difficult to navigate and walk around that part. And it's to kind of remind people that there are other demographics that we have to take care of, like kids who can't drive, so you want them to be able to access the city, and also maybe disabled people and all that, so you want them to be, you know, more easily accessing those spaces.
Yeah, I think there's not a lot of these like very welcoming spaces for them to rest, and I think outside that mosque is a very successful one. It's very cooling and it's really very comfortable to be in, and I wanted to portray that in the book and also have the kids speak to them as well.
But there were also scenes of, I mean, where you can showcase homelessness, essentially, you know, people sleeping on these benches, right? How did your collaborators and other stakeholders respond to this decision to include these images, especially considering that, because to a certain extent this is also a project to showcase Kuala Lumpur, right? Were they open to you guys showcasing the realities of Kuala Lumpur as is, or were they reluctant to, for you guys to? I mean, the fact that it's already in shows that, I mean, I don't think they mind. But yeah, was there a slight pushback from them initially, or did you guys have to actually defend that decision?
No.
Yeah, there was no pushbacks on that.
There were no pushbacks.
It was quite liberating in that way. They didn't kind of clamp down on certain things. Yeah.
Yeah. They didn't question it at all. They're okay with a lot of our decisions. So it was, I'm grateful for that as well. Yeah, I think maybe we are very in line with our thoughts of what to include. So there's not much conflict what we want to put or not. Yeah, so that's one of it. Yeah.
All right. Okay. So what's the reception like to this book? I mean, you have heard a lot of feedback from your readers. Mind sharing some of them? I mean, we've spoken about it earlier, some of parts of it, but what else did they say regarding your book?
Yeah, one of it is the fact that it has no words. That means that the parents and the kids have to do the work of interpreting the story into a kind of... It's a different way of reading, lah, that I guess most people are not used to. You read shapes and colours rather than words, right? So one of the readers, the parents, were saying how if she doesn't tell the same story, that their kids get a bit confused, or not confused, but like get a bit annoyed, or like kind of would point out to her, it's like, hey, isn't it like this? Yesterday you say like this, why today you say like that? You know, that kind of thing. Which I thought was quite funny. I know it's more burden on the parents, and I apologize for that. But at the same time, I also think that from another parent's point of view, they got the kids to do the reading and got the kids to tell the story back to the parents instead. So that was quite exciting. So I wonder if it's, you know, not being too direct with your kids and saying like maybe they can come on board and tell the story as well. And both of you tell the story together, and that makes a much more interactive storytelling activity. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we also underestimate kids a lot. They actually they have really great creativity themselves. From my understanding, always a children's book, illustrations are really huge and obvious, shapes are obvious, expressions are obvious. But in our book, there's a lot of details. And sometimes we're afraid that maybe, I mean, some aunties or uncles, they're afraid that this is too small for kids to read or what, there's too much things going on. But there's actually one kid that really, like, I mean, maybe it's too small, lah, but like this kid was literally face onto the book to just see what's actually happening on the scene. I have a photo of it, and it's kind of cute that he's very invested what's actually happening in the background. So the details do matter, lah, and they actually enjoy picking out the different people or furnitures in the streets. And I find that fun, though. Like, I think back then when I was young, there are books that filled with all kinds of objects, and I can really get myself lost inside that page. What can I find? Where's Waldo? That kind of thing. So we wanted to include that so that the kids can really stare at the book and really find the tiny gems that exist in it, and maybe tell their parents, and then the parents will be like, oh, yeah, oh. And then, yeah, so it's like a dynamic conversation, not just like you yourself reading it because it's so obvious, you don't need to ask anymore. But yeah, so things like that.
Yeah, and I have to say, I do appreciate the fact that the book doesn't have any words. Yeah, which I find quite interesting. Again, I went in blind, so I was like, oh, looking for the first word to appear, and there were no words at all until the end. So I was like, oh, okay, yeah. You guys already wrote out a sequel, but will there be a new project that's similar in spirit, perhaps, that perhaps explore the city as well as, I guess, looking at architecture in the city moving forward in the future?
We did discuss some ideas, but obviously not very full yet. This is still in progress, like a thought, not even progress, sorry. It's about suburban.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The suburban situation. But we're not sure when we will be doing it because we need some time to... We want to focus on somewhere in the Kuala still at the moment to push out for more events and stuff like that. But yeah, it would be nice to do another similar kind of project.
Yeah, okay. Similar.
You mentioned event. Are you looking to perhaps, I guess, do a walking tour of sorts, you know, inspired by this book? Or what kind of events are you thinking about with regard to this book?
Yeah, so we've done 3 events so far. One's a kids walk. So we brought some kids around KL. This was in collaboration with Kerja Jalan. And it was quite fun. They really were invested in the city. We find some routes where it's safer for them to run around. So it's like, okay, from this point, you can just run. So I had to stand at the other end to make sure that all the kids stop at that point before they go out of boundaries. And then there was a pop-up book workshop where they kind of... Also another collaboration with Huda and Kalisa. Both are primary school art teachers. And they kind of showed the kids how to make this little model of a room. And then there was another one which just me and Lisa, we gave a talk in MIA where I teach, but to the illustration department. And that was also quite fun. I think the students there were quite engaged with the content that we put out. So yeah, looking forward, we want to do more of these events. We have some planned already in end of April. There will be one in Estate.
Yeah.
Or Elite. That's how you're supposed to pronounce it, I think.
Elite.
I thought it's pronounced as light, no?
Oh, as light. That's true.
Anyways,
okay, got it.
That bookshop, yeah, the Taiwanese bookshop. So yeah, there will be one there. And yeah, so we hope we're going to plan more of those.
We realized that we don't only want to target the workshops to kids la. Therefore, we did a mini talk about our book to uni students who studies illustration. So yeah, in terms of workshop, it can be framed in any way, a book reading or a walk or a paper making session. Yeah, like it's quite varied la, in terms of what kind of events we're introducing.
All right, yeah. Fantastic. Okay, so for our listeners out there who would like to, I guess, follow you guys to find out more about these events, where can they go to find more information?
You can find the book from Instagram called Somewhere in the Kuala. And if you want to find my work, it's keaideke, also in Instagram.
Well, to purchase the book, you can get it from Suburbia Project's website. Yes. So if you go onto their website, they have the books there and you can buy it online. Otherwise, if you want it physical, there's a list of bookshops that we also have on our Instagram that carries our book. Riwayat, Ilham Gift Shop, Kinokuniya, Estate as well. Yeah, so those.
You've been tuning in to I Love KL and I've been speaking to Lisa Goh and William Chiu, authors of Somewhere in the Kuala, a children's book about the city published by Suburbia Projects. That's all we have for this episode of I Love KL. If you miss any part of the show, you can look for the podcast on our website, bfm.my/ilovekl. Alternatively, you can also download our app, which is available on both Google Play and the App Store. I Love KL can also be found on Spotify and other streaming platforms. Don't forget to also follow the station on X at BFM Radio. My name is Sanif Baharudin. You have been tuning in to I Love KL, bringing you closer to the people and places of our capital city. Join us again next week, only on BFM 89.9, the business station.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.